Start your day with Torah away. Rabbi Yeshua Jacobs.
Morning, Rabbi Yisai. My Kehilla has been learning, continues to learn Chulin, and we've come across another fascinating sugya. I probably spent, without exaggerating, 15 hours preparing this year. There's an incredible amount of information on the subject we're going to speak about. I'm trying to compact it to make it clear and concise. So we need Siyata Dishmaya, and Mitzshem, you'll enjoy it. Now, this is a sugya that touches on many areas of Shas. And you may find that it has a lot of halachic applications, although at first you may find that difficult to swallow. Now, that's a hint to what we're going to speak about. We're going to speak about tuma balua. That means tame things that go inside of something else, as we'll see. Now you'll say to me, are we learning Hilchos Taharos here? Well, as we get towards the last, let's say, half of the shir, you'll see that this is a yesod that has incredible halachic applications, some of which are very lamaisa, and some are taking place in areas right near you here in Manchester. You don't have to be a kohen working in the base of Migdash to appreciate what we're going to say, although we have to have the yesodis first in order to appreciate where we're going with the application. So first of all, the Gemara is based in Chulin Daf Ayin Aleph and base. And the Gemara is a very interesting diuk from a pasuk that teaches this yesod of tuma balua. The Gemara says, doesn't it say in the pasuk, "Va'oichel min nivelasa yichaves begadav"? Doesn't it say a man who ate a nivela chas v'shalom, he ended up eating a tamei piece of meat, he is allowed then to go and tovel, and then he'll be a tahor by the evening. So the Gemara says, well, how much time has taken past? He just had his unfortunate sandwich 20 minutes ago, and then he looks at his watch and says, gosh, I can catch the last shift at the mikveh, and he goes and he tovels. 20 minutes later, he's putting a truma sandwich in his mouth. Well, how did that work? What's in his stomach? He's still got nevela floating around. So the Gemara says, yeah, that is called tuma balua. He may have nevela in his stomach, but it doesn't ruin the truma. Well, that's a chiddush. And this is a makor the Gemara brings for tuma balua. But the three other makoris we're going to discuss, this is the first one. The second one, it says, okay, that's fine. This is a hemshech of this. It says, so that was when he just swallowed it. But what about when it goes deeper into his digestive tract? It's called lamala and lamata. What about lamata? How do we know that? So the Gemara says, yes. That's from a kol v'chomer. I'm not going to go into the kol v'chomer now. It's a bit complicated, but basically, the whole digestive tract would be included in tuma balua. Fine. Now the Gemara says, okay, we've discussed human beings. Usually human beings are eating nevela and going to tovel. But what about behemoths? So it says, does a behemoth also have this din of tuma balua if you'd get something inside of its stomach? So it says, yes, it's a kol v'chomer. Why? Because if a person who can become tamei during his lifetime, has this protective feature of tuma balua, what about a behemah that they can't become tamei? So certainly they can protect it. And the Gemara says, yes, that's correct. There's also tuma balua regarding animals. Now, I'll just digress for a moment to discuss, well, first of all, what's the case of this? You might say, what is an animal doing eating tamei things? Who's serving its nevelas? The Gemara comes up with a case. It says, if a dog would have in his stomach, let's say, a piece of nevela meat, and then he goes into your house. So what about your house? Or sorry, not nevela meat. He eats kazayas a bit, this is a bit morbid, he eats kazayas in a mace. He's eaten, somehow he's bitten a piece from a mace, and then he goes into your house. Has he just made your house tummy or not? So he said, no, his stomach protects the house from tuma. Now, for some reason, it seems it takes different amounts of time for different things to digest tamei things. We would have thought we eat, lahavdil, animals eat. The Gemara doesn't look at it like that. It says, no, for a dog, it takes 3 days. For birds and for fish, it's as much time as it takes very, very quickly to throw something into the fire and for it to burn up. So that's probably a matter of minutes. And the other balei chayim are all lumped together as being one day. So, okay, it seems that this is, well, do we understand this? Do we understand that it takes so long for these things to be digested? Well, let me bring you a mashal from what it says about people. There's a Tosfos who says, by the time 7 days has gone by, you can be sure that the food has been nisakel. It's the lashon, has been digested, let's say. Well, if you've learned Hilchos Brachos, you know it doesn't take 7 days till you've lost your bracha achrona on bread meal. You have 72 minutes. So how do we fit these two things together? Is it taking days and days to digest things, or is it taking a matter of an hour or two? So I think the pshat is the two different types, two aspects of digestion. The one is, how long does it take for you to no longer feel full? That's what we talk about when it takes 72 minutes. You've now processed the food in a way, but did the food go out of your body? Did it cease to be food? Because for nevela, it's still considered nevela as long as a dog would want to eat it. So for there, we're saying there's a different kind of ichol. How long would this thing still be considered this food item, even if you don't feel full from it anymore? And that could be the days or the hours that we spoke about. One other detail we have to know is that if the animal dies, strangely enough, he no longer is considered to be tumah balua. Same thing would be true about people, but I don't want to speak about people. Let's stick to animals for now. So a minute ago, he was this protective field around the tumah. Then he dies. All of a sudden, he doesn't have that property. So it's only while they're alive that these protective abilities exist. Okay, on to the second drasha. I'll try to move quickly through the drasha so we can get to a bit more lemaisa things, but it's important to know them. The second one is a drasha in Chulin, where there's a pasuk that says, Kol asher yiga al penei hasada b'chol cherev, a person who touches on the surface of the field, you can translate as you like, al penei hasada, who touches a cholol cherev. He's touching tumas mace, but it has to be al penei hasada. So Rabbi Yishmael says, what do you mean on the surface of the field? So he says, this is a drasha to tell you that if it's under the field, if it's absorbed, if it's tumah that's absorbed, then it won't make you tummy. Fine. What is it referring to? So this is, I'm not going to translate everything I say. If I need to, I will. But it's talking about an uber inside a rechem. I'll translate a bit. It's talking about a human fetus inside a rechem. So unfortunately, if that uber dies, so we would say, well, there's a dead person here, or however you want to define an uber. So says Rabbi Yishmael, yeah, but it's inside, it's not al penei asada, it's inside of something. So that uber, which has just died, will not be metame things. So if the woman with this uber inside of her would then go into your house, and unfortunately everybody realized what's just happened, don't worry, your house is still tahor, still inside of her. Now they ask, why would we need a second drasha? We've already said that tuma balua, it works. So you've told us now by a person's stomach, and now you're telling us by the rechem, what's going on here? Why do we need two sources? So there are different answers, but a sefer called the Teres Paz explains like this, and I think it's based on Gemara's that we saw. You could, if you only learned about the stomach, you'd say, yeah, it's protects. That's a place that digests food. It's a processing plant, but a rechem is just a holding tank. That's one difference. The other thing is, the uber is in its place of natural growth. Who says it's being held? Food is being held in your stomach, but it doesn't grow there. If it does, you have a great way to save money. But that's not where food grows. Okay, see a doctor if it does. But if it, Masha'en Kane, if you look at an uber, this is the place where it's meant to grow. So maybe this isn't being held, this is just its place of growth. The third source is for Rabbi Akiva, who does not accept this drasha of Pnei Asada. So where does he learn it from? So he says, I have a special drasha. I don't accept, according to Rashi, that uber won't be tamei. I hold it would be, but an uber of a behema, if an animal has a dead something in its, or some source of tuma in its rechem, whatever it is, so then he holds that will be protected because of this principle of tuma balua. And he says like this, so kol v'chomer. He says, if the mother's womb helps when you shecht her to make the baby permissible to eat, and that's when it's dead, so or she's dead as well, it could be, it worked. So what's going to be, why shouldn't those same mechitzas, her rechem, work in order to protect him while she's alive and he's dead from becoming tamei? She's got more effectiveness now to protect. So that's the third drasha. And the last drasha is questionable. Gemara says, has everybody heard of Nivlas of Tahor? There's a principle that if a person would eat the nevela of a Tahor bird, he eats a chicken, but the chicken wasn't shechted properly. The Torah says, midiraisa, he has a special tumah. So they're medayik. That's only a bird. But if it was a behemoth Tahora, then you'd be okay. Say, if so, it seems, why are you okay? Why aren't you tame? So you say, that could be a fourth source for Tumah Balua, that you're not tame because of this diuk. It's only an oif that makes you tame, not an avelus of a behemoth. Fine. So we made it through the first set of drushes, but now I'm going to introduce you to another concept. We've spoken about Tumah Balua. That means if there's something tame in the man's stomach, it doesn't, or mace inside the dog, or whatever, it doesn't go out, doesn't affect the outer world. Now this thing called Tahara Balua. Tahara Balua means, and this we're going to come back to in practical applications later, that if a person has something tahor in his stomach, and then he goes into an oil mace, it's already an oil mace, the thing inside his stomach is unaffected. He is tame, but what's inside of him is not. So, and Rava says, it's exactly the same principles. Rava says, Kashem shetuma balua eina mitame kach tahara balua eina mitzma. Just as much as we've proven that things inside don't go outwards, but tuma from the outside won't come inwards. Okay, and it says, where do we learn it from? Again, it's a kol v'chomer. If we want, I'm not sure if time will allow me to go through all the various limudim, but basically, let's see if we can do it quickly once. If it works, great. If not, I don't think I'm going to answer questions on it. Hopefully, I'll get it clear the first time. It says, if a kli cheres can keep tumah from coming in, but it doesn't stop tumah from going out, so a man who does stop tumah from going out, because we just said he's got tumah balua, isn't it all the more so that he should be able to stop tumah from coming in? That's the kol v'chomer. And we've seemed to have proven then that things remain tahor within the person as well. Everything we've spoken about today is so far principally focused on the stomach. And people like thinking about the stomachs, but we're going to go a bit broader than that. We're going to go into the rechem, the womb. So now, there's a famous Mishnah, I think famous because it involves a story that probably many of us have heard. It's sort of a story, but it's a historical fact as well. When they wanted to make the May Para, they had a recruiting service. They called up select noshim, and they said, would you be the woman responsible for raising the children to keep the mechatas tahor? So they said, yes, but what's involved? They said, well, it's a bit complicated, but you've got to change your lifestyle. The Mishnah Para, Gimel Beis, says they had special built neighborhoods that were built on top of a solid rock. And the rock was solid down to the tahoim, so there was no graves underneath it. And they told the women, now when you become pregnant, you come expecting, go to live there. And your children, when you raise them batara, they will be the boys that will remain tahor. Now, the Mishnah includes the fact that there was some sort of protection offered by the mothers being pregnant, going there while they're pregnant. Wait a minute, maybe yesterday they went to the Beis HaKavoros. What does it help? It's a bit late now. You should have called her before she became pregnant. So it seems to be that being in the matzav of being pregnant protects their children from becoming tamei. I'll just point out that we're saying that the rechem then is protecting from tuma on these little vlavos. Think about it for a minute. Someone pointed out, it's interesting, chiddush. The rechem is a source of tuma. It makes tumas leida, tumas zivus, tumas nidus. And at the same time, it's protecting the uber inside from becoming tameh. And I would add, it could even be at the very same moment that it's producing the tumah. So go get your head around that one. It's tameh itself producing tumah, and yet it's protecting from tumah. It's a gzeir sekosev, so I don't know if we're going to get to the amkis, but I thought that was an interesting question. Now you might have said to me, okay, well, these are closed areas. We understand that. It's mistabra. You have a closed off and isolated area. Maybe it's like the plastic bags that the kahanim, some of them sit on the airplane. They're protected. They're sealed off. Well, what if I would tell you that they don't have to be fully closed? Is that going to keep tuma out? Tuma is a very invasive kind of little thing or big thing. It'll get through houses or go to buildings. They say in London, I think I heard once, not saying halacha lemaisa, they said there's a shaila, if the entire underground system may be carrying tumah because wherever the tunnels go, if you just have one mace buried under one section of the tunnels, you've got tens of miles of area invaded by tumah. Don't change your travel plans because of this. Not principally goyim. It could be a Yiddish mace. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Okay, so what if there's a gap in it? So sure enough, it still acts as a tumah b'lua protector. So how do we find this? The case is of a shepherd. And the shepherd comes across an animal that's unfortunately got a dead uber inside of it, and he wants to, first case is, it's called psichas akever, which I'm not going to translate, but there's a little opening, and we say it's tahor until the head goes out. Fine. Ad shiyotze roshe luchotz. And then it says even more. The shepherd takes his hand, glad I'm not a shepherd, and he reaches in to check out the matzav. So the thing is opened, the rechem is open, his hand is going in, and it's still tahor. It's still protected, let's say, not tahor, because this is a dead, this is a nevela now, but it's still in the same situation of not being metame things outside. Even the shepherd's hand, midiraisa. He's touching tumah, he's reaching in, he's opened the sack. He's still not tame. As Rashi says, until it's kepika shel erev, which is some sort of sewing bundle device, I don't know how you say it, it's like for threads, until then, it's still tahor. If he reaches his hand and touches in this little opening there, he remains tahor. Okay, why should this be? It's open, isn't it? So we could answer with one of the drushes we said before. It has to be al pnei hasada. Until it's out of the sada, it's still protected. It's still in its matzah of being balua. Okay, you've reached your hand in. Okay, there's a bit of an opening. But is it al pnei hasada yet? It's not. So if it's not, it's not going to be giving off its tumah. It's a gzeiros hakasev. One final chiddush in this sugya is we've spoken about the inside world and the outside world. What happens if in the inside world there are two things? Classic case is two rings. You have a tameh ring and a tahor ring. And somebody is a bit unusual in his eating habits and he swallows both. So first he plops in the tameh ring and then he takes the tahor ring. Maybe he's a smuggler, and he puts them together in his stomach. So now, we've said until now that tumah doesn't have an international passport to go inside, outside, outside, inside. But what about inside and inside? Maybe there we should say that they do affect each other. And incredibly, Rabbah says the same thing applies. They don't affect each other. Amar Rabbah, kagoin shabala shtei tabois, if he swallows two rings, achas tamei v'achas tahora. The tummy one does not affect the tahor one, it remains tahor. So now, Rabbi Akiva Eger picks up on this, and he says, this case has just changed our whole understanding of tumah b'lua. Until now, we could have said it's a protective separation between the two worlds, inside and outside. But how can we understand this case? There is no separation, they're all in the inside world. So he says, it must be that tumah b'lua works in a totally different way than we thought. It works that the dinei tumah have stopped. When you enter these places, you're on hold. You've pushed the pause buttons. You've taken a holiday, however you want to put it. Tumah and tahara are off the charts. They're not here anymore. But it's not that they've disappeared entirely. It's not that you've taken the tumah off. Says Chazon Ish, it can't be it takes it off, because what happens if this fellow, after swallowing his two rings, and he can tell one's gold, one's silver, he knows which is which, he suddenly gets a stomach ache, and he regurgitates the tame one. Well, if we said it went into place and it cleaned off, it rebooted the whole system, when it comes out, it should be tahor. And that's not the halacha. The halacha is when this ring comes out, it's tame like it was at the beginning. So it seems this is a holding zone for tumah and tahara. Nothing happens, no business is done, we're shut for the day. Okay. So now, let's just get clear what parts of the body are included. You may have heard of beis hastarim. We're not talking about beis hastarim. Beis hastarim would be your ears, your nose, roll. None of you have them, but if you had rolls of fat, then under those places, the armpits, this is not what we're talking about, not balua. You can't take a tummy ring and put it under your arm and say it's protected. Those are called beis hastarim. So the places, the way the Meiri puts it is, if they are places that ain't asui ligalos, the places that are not waiting to become opened. So that is going to be balua, and places which are going to be opened, shasui ligalos, so those are beis hastarim, and that's not what we're talking about. So now let's start getting into the practical applications. So, for example, What happens if you have a tummy liquid, and we'll see that we don't all have tummy liquids hanging around, but we have something quite similar, and it gets absorbed into your clay oven walls. So Rashi says, if it goes in, if you have things absorbed into clay, like our pots or like our dishes, so then it's considered tumah balua. So bear that in mind as we go forward. One exception to this is if you would take a tummy ring and you would be making bricks, you're a brick maker, you take your tummy ring and you put it into a brick. So you think to yourself, terrific, it's protected, it's surrounded, everything's worked out. That's not the case. The Miri says, no, a levena, if you put something into a brick, so then the tumor remains on the ring and nothing has been protected at all. So what's the difference? It seems that what comes out is tumah balua means you were swallowed. It doesn't mean you were put inside of something. It says this is comparable to our dead dog. Do you remember how we said the dog protects while he's alive, but he doesn't protect in his stomach when he's dead? What happened? What's the difference? It's still in his stomach. So it seems to be when some sort of process of swallowing is going on, then you're protected, but once it's just a brick or a dead dog, it ends. Now, where does this apply? We've been talking about Tumah and Tahara, and everybody's thinking, okay, I'm ready to sign up for the Tumah and Tahara Club, but let's talk practically. So where does this come out practically? So the poskim jump on the sugya, and they say, you know where it applies? By Issur v'Heter. So where is that? If you have, the lashon of the Orach HaShulchan is, Kaimalan, Ein Tumah Balua, Mitama Tahara Balua. We know the sugya we just said, that Tumah Balua protects from things becoming tameh and vice versa. Kumokain ain iser balua, balua oiser heter balua. So if you have iser v'heter, where's the case? You have a case of a person who put chametz into his pot walls, and now he wants to use those same pots to cook his non-chametzic things, and it's Pesach time. First of all, he's got a question: is he over in Bal Yeroi and Bal Yemotze? Because does he own chametz or not? So, according to this, we're saying, when you go into this status of being balua, you're dinim end. You may be particles of something, but you're not iser. You're not iser chometz. And the same thing would be if you take iser, let's say, of basar v'cholav, and you put them into the same pot walls. First was the basar, and now you want to mevatel it with heter. So how much do you need? Well, it depends. Do we count you as being a reality or not? You may be there, but are you iser? So the poskim seem to take on, there's a strong tzad to say that you aren't there. I'm not saying halacha l'maisa, so nobody should get excited about this and say, well, we learned in Yoredeya not like that, I can believe you. But that is the application, or that's this nekudas ha-machlokas. Are we comparing issur v'heter to tumah balua or not? Do you disappear, your dinim just go off, or they're still there? Another case is, and I'm not in the profession, but apparently you can take lots of plant dyes from orla plants. Now, I don't know which plants are used for dyeing. Imagine pomegranates, because I've ruined a lot of shirts with that. But be that as it may, you're taking this orla, you're putting it into your cloth. So we've never spoken about cloth before. And that is a question. Is it batol? Is it balua into this cloth or not? So the Gemara says it would have been, except that you can easily get it out by heating it. So since it's so easy to get out, that's not... two reasons, actually. It says one is you're enjoying the benefit of it. You can see the coloring, so you haven't exactly made it disappear into the cloth. But the second thing is a question of can you get it out or not. Now, here we're going to see something which is going to surprise you. It certainly surprised me. There's a shaila for men called, I don't know, what's the lashon HaKodesh? Nituach prostate. Right? Okay, I guess I better say what it is in English. Prostate surgery. Right? This is nogeya, and it's discussed by the poskim in Pisul about being posel to kahal. You've got a man who has damage to his zachris. Sometimes the nafkamin of that is he's not allowed to marry any more the women that he was previously allowed to marry. So the poskim were asked, unfortunately, there are people who need this kind of surgery. Are they now forbidden to marry the same Jewish women? They turn to the sugya. Say, what? Where's Tumah Tahara? Where's Issur v'Heter? What are we talking about? Prostate surgery. So, the Tzitz Eliezer and others say, Well, this is the Shavya Kein Tuma Balua. We can compare this to Tuma Balua. How so? Kivan da nituach nase bishvili hazera hakanusim b'toch haguf. So, and this is not, he says, since the surgery is done in a place hidden deep within the body, and not on any of the outer parts, eino pasul milavo b'kahal. He's not pasuled. So he just said, this application is, you've got something which could have taken away his membership, but we say, no, it was inside of his body. Since it's inside of his body, that's not the kind of thing that the Torah was talking about when it said his zacharis has been damaged. So Im Kein, we've sorted it out with Tuma Balua. On a practical, hopefully we shouldn't know about it, but that's the one of the, I'm not saying again halakha maisa, but this is the poskim, are makel in certain circumstances because of this reasoning. Now let's just get clear the svara, what's going on over here. What makes this thing Balua? What happens when it's Balua? Let's say differently. So Rashi says something in Chulin, which is quite hard to understand. He says, when it's Balua, you know what happens to it? It's kemucheles. It's like it's digested. Tumor goes into this place, it's like it's digested. Now, based on what we've said, people could very well start shouting at me, how can that possibly be? Here are some of the reasons why. One is, rings aren't digested. If a ring isn't digested, what is it shy to say that the way this works is by digesting things? Number two, unless there's some problems, a rechem is not a place for digestion. So, what is Rashi talking about? So, luckily for us, Rashi somewhere else has a totally different hesber. He says, you know what happens when something gets balua? Horei hi kamo she'eino. It's like it's not. Sounds quite philosophical. It's like it's not. But that's his words. So why did Rashi change? So one hesber is a nida, in Chulin, he's explaining according to the drasha that we said. We're talking about a drasha man who swallows truma, and then he goes in tovels, and then, he swallows a nevela, and then wants to go to eat truma. And that sugya, we say it's like it's digested. Is that the overall overarching principle for what happens to truma? No. Rashi says in nida, it's kamisheino. It becomes non-existent. Now, if you say it's non-existent, you take that literally, as some people who I spoke to did, and there is a little bit of basis from a Rash that maybe that's what he means, but consider the following. If we say it's like it's kemoshe eino, so you take a cow, and you put inside of him chulin, and you walk him into the azara. Do we just say, kemoshe eino? You didn't take chulin into the azara. Nothing happened. Number two, a man says to his wife, I'm giving a get to you on condition that you don't bring a ring into my house. And then as some shugas, she swallows a ring and she goes into his house. So do we say, no, she didn't bring a ring in the house. There's no ring here. Now you see that this will raise the eyebrows of many border officers. If you ever go to Liverpool, they show you pictures of people who swallowed things to bring them over the border. Many of whom did not live to tell the story because of what those swallowed things did when they were inside. But it's an old trick. It's an old trick. Officer, I'm not bringing half a kilo of illegal drugs into the country. Go search me. They say, okay, we'll put you in front of an x-ray machine. So there's the debate. He says, I didn't bring it. They say 10 years in prison. And I'll tell you who wins. So it's hard to say that it's kamesha enu. Another one, another great trick. Yes, they would. Yeah, he gets right. He gets saved because he doesn't break in his stomach. Another one is, there's a rule that when it comes to Geneva, if you steal something and the thing you stole is still Ba'ain, you have to give it back. And if it's not, you can pay Tashlumim. So you ever seen your kids, somebody wants the dessert that the other one wants? So the way they solve the machlokas is they quickly swallow it. It's not Ba'ain. It's not around anymore. So I'll pay you for it. So with desserts, it doesn't work so well because you can't give it back. But if it would be a stolen item, so you say, I'll swallow it. I don't have your ring. What do you want from me? It's kamosha eino. It's not around anymore. I'll pay you for it. Never mind that it was a collector's item, whatever else. I'll give you the value for the gold. So these are things that are quite hard to imagine that we mean ad kadei kach. And in fact, the Chazon Ish and Rabbi Akiva Eger don't say like this pshat. The way the Chazon Ish puts it is, eino... When you're in this holding pattern of Tuma Balua, you cease to create new dinim. There's no interplay of dinim. But it's not that you don't exist. And like we said, how could it be that you're commoshaina? What happens when you come out if you've been changed to something totally different? You're non-existent. So when you come out, why aren't you tahor? You disappeared. You're not. You're a new man. You're a new ring. You say, no, you're the same old ring, and when you come out, you've got the same old dinim. Rabbi Akiva Eger also writes this lashon, and he says, kaparach minei tuma. It's like the tuma floated away. But it doesn't mean that you floated away, just the tuma floated away. So now let's get down to some very interesting applications of this. And you know, you probably read in the press, or maybe the Jewish press, I mean, not even more than that, the advertiser, they took out an ad about, make sure you sign up, and here I'll do my bit for it, to say you're not giving donations of your organs, right? Okay, so that's the famous bit for town. Now, if you were a Kohen, you would have read different things into that ad. Why? The Shaila was asked to Rav Moshe Feinstein. Somebody, I don't know what happened, he lost a foot. So the hospital said to him, no problem, we have a stockpile of foot parts from Mason. Dead people's feet, dead people's bones, I'm not sure how far it went, but he was asked about some sort of installation, a transplanted foot from a dead, they told him openly, it's from a dead person.
Bone transplants are quite common.
Bone transplants, this one has that, plus an additional element that it wasn't even, we'll see, going to be put inside of him. It's going to be on top and on the outside and the inside. But let's say your case, sure, transplants are very common, and once you start talking about from a mace, so there's certain parts, let's say bones and other things, that could be a big problem for a Kohen. Was he allowed, and we're talking even from a Goy, so until now we mentioned in passing that a Yiddish tomb is more severe than a Goy's, but that's the Gabi Tumas oil. But when it comes to touching Maga and Masa and lifting, it amounts to derises. So can he accept, he's not just worried about being the oil with this foot, he's going to have this foot moved on him, touched by him. Is he allowed to take the foot or not? So, Rav Moshe says, and this he's mechadesh something here based on this Rashi and Mikvois. He says, you can. Why? Because it's tuma balua. This tuma is tuma balua. He says, the tam chidish atorish shaloi matama tuma balua hu mishum de bottle agav gufoi. The Rashi's lashon is, this thing, when it's inside of you, it becomes bottle to your body. So you've got this ring in your stomach, it's become bottle to you. So he takes a huge chiddush, and he says, that's true even if it's not inside of you. Even if it's being sewn onto this Kohen's leg, it's not inside of anything. He says, but what? The common feature is it's becoming bottle to his goof. Being bottle to his goof, it's no longer tame. But listen to this, he says an incredible thing, and I don't know which doctors would agree to do this. He said, that's very good once it's attached. And the chius from the living is going into the foot, so it's bottled to him. But there's going to be a period of time where the surgeons are busy sewing it all together, attaching the blood vessels and the nerves and the skin and then the muscle all together. It's not got chius yet. What are you going to do now? You've got maga, you've got masa. He says, tell the doctors to arrange it, again, I don't know how it's practically, to keep everything still until it's attached. Why? The machlekes rishonim, if things don't move, if the yid isn't moving it or being moved on top of him, so then he's not going to have tumas masa. Maga, how will he get around that? I think, I have to check again, I think because of basis starim. Remember we spoke about the two types of parts of the body? Basis starim does not pass through maga, beyond the scope maybe for today's discussion, but basically he was mata because of tumo balua. And I think we have time for the other case. We do. This is also a fantastic case. And this one makes its way into the Mishnah Berurah. It's not something so modern. The question was asked, what happens if you have a woman who's married to a Kohen and she becomes pregnant? And she doesn't know, certainly in the olden days, she had no idea what the gender of the fetus was. Now she wants to go to visit an oil. She wants to go to visit an oil. I'm not saying whether that's our minhag or not our minhag. Maybe it's not to be advised. But that's what, maybe it was a yahrzeit. She wants to go to the oil. So she's got this little potential kohen inside of her. And if you remember, not only is a kohen not allowed to make himself tummy, you're not allowed to cause tumor to a kohen. So the shaila was asked to the rekeach. It was very, very, one of the rishonim. He was asked the shaila, can she go to the oil? So the Shach brings the answer to the Rekeach, and he says, Eishes Kohen Shemu Beres Muteris likanis boyolame. She is allowed in. Listen to his answer. This is where things get surprising. Why? Desveik sveikahu. The reason why, now we would, how would we have finished the sentence? Why is she allowed in? We would have said, because it's tumah balua. No problem. It's inside. She's going into an oil mitzvah, but she's protecting the little person, girl, boy, whatever it is. So what's the problem? He doesn't say that. He says, desveik sveikahu, shema nefalhu, and shema nekevahu. Maybe it won't live at all, and maybe it's a female. So the achronim get very worked up about this. They say, the Mishnah Berurah brings this. Mishnah Berurah in the Shindim Gimel quotes this, the chatchila, this woman is allowed to enter the oil mitzvah, the af shidira lana shivade, Vlad, even though it looks like she's going to give birth there, so he's thrown in a new thing. It's not just visiting an oil, she's going to give birth. Shema ye zocher, v'yitma sham, maybe it'll be male and it'll be a problem. Afilu hachi mutzu desveik sveikahu. He allows it because of the same svara. So the Magen Avraham and others ask, what's going on over here? What happened to Tuma Balua? So, there are going to be a few answers, and we'll see how much time we have to get through them. Let me just give a hakdama. The poskim say we are not talking about a woman who's the shayla pekuach nefesh. If she has any shayla pekuach nefesh, this is a non-starter. She can just go to whichever hospital is closest, and nobody's going to think twice. And you could say birth, by definition, very often is the case that is pekuach nefesh, because if she doesn't get medical treatment, what's going to be next? So you could have home births. Okay, I'm not going to tell you if that's a good idea or not, but it's presumed that this is a dangerous matzav. And even after she gives birth, you say, okay, so you gave birth, so now get out of here. So he says, no, you have a certain amount of time which she's still at risk. So Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said, if the doctors tell her you're now medically safe, then after 24 hours, this Eishes Kohen should get out of there. He gives her 24 hours if the doctors have approved a medical condition. Other women, more leisurely, I don't know what you want to do in a hospital exactly, but they can take a more leisurely approach. She should get out after 24 hours. And Rav Nissen Karela says, it could be, in Chutz La'aretz, this isn't such a big deal, because who says that there's any Yiddish mesim in this oil? Who says, first they'd have to have a morgue, and second they'll have to be in the morgue or yidden. So we don't have to have that presumption. You go to some hospitals in Eretz Yisrael, and they have signs up that say, Kohanim out, basically, because they know that there's somebody died, and it's shayek to the whole building. Like we said, the whole building gets filled with tumah. So now the nafkamida will be if she has a choice of hospitals. Because you'll say, if she's in Pekuach Nef, she's rushing around, two hospitals of equal distance, and the one is, let's say, closer to her parents, and one is further from her parents, but they're equally close to her. So you say, for Pekuach Nefesh, you can for sure go to a hospital. But who told you to choose this hospital over that one? So let's say that would be the case that we'd be discussing a woman who has these problems, and the Rekeach is mattering her because of a Sveik Sveika. So why do you need the Sveik Sveika? So, yeah, what happened to Tuma Balua? So I'm going to tell you a few of the answers. I don't think we have time for more. One of them is an interesting chiddush that there's two isurim for a kohen. One is to become tamei, and one is for him to even be near a goses. And that means you're not even becoming tamei there, you're just near tuma. According to this, the kovet shurim said that could be the basis for why you need a sveik sveika, because she shouldn't be going there in that case. Another one is we have to be concerned she's about to give birth. We're not talking about a regular case. We're talking about a case who's imminently giving birth. And since she may be imminently giving birth, the head or the amount that we spoke about could already be out. The opening could have already opened. The head could be out. If so, it's not Tuma Balua anymore. If it's not Tuma Balua anymore, you can't rely on that. You need a Sveik Sveika. There are some other answers, but I don't know if it's right for me to continue. I'll just point out one point for you to think about. It's also discussed in the poskim. What happens if she has a scan? They do an ultrasound. Now, it's either she asked for it, she now knows it's a male. She's lost her Sveik Sveika, says Rabbi Yashiv, she's got a problem. Let's say she doesn't ask for it. How hard is it to ask? They've got the scan done. It's sitting in front of her. The results are right there. So she could say, I'm not going to ask anything. What about an Efshar Levar Safek? It's so easy to check. Go ahead and ask. So we're not going to have time to answer that. I'll just point out that this may create problems for the woman, and she should ask the Shiloh. She'll be Zaycha to be a square of Tzedek in Herav Yomeinu. Amen.
Now, the road, the base of the mountains, is going to be the idea.